presentation is in front of the council. It was in the stack of paper you had when you sat down yesterday. Dr. Cadron.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will be presenting four different SSC memo reports to you from our August meeting. In August, we had a fairly full agenda. We had some business matter to deal with, and then all of the benchmark assessments that Dr. Weinberg just presented, Monkfors, Scallop, Pollock. In addition, we reviewed applications of the Habitat Plan Development Team. We also revisited some acceptable biological catch recommendations for Gulf of Maine winter flounder, Georges Bank yellowtail flounder, and several of the index-based groundfish stocks. Very quickly with SSC business, we reported on an annual catch limit workshop that several of us attended in Woods Hole, gave details on the upcoming national SSC meeting, made plans for our next meeting in November. We discussed SSC appointments for 2011 to 2013. All of our appointments are coming up this year and our calendar for next year. I'll start with monkfish. Our terms of reference were to review the updated assessment that Dr. Weinberg just presented to you, including the recommended revision to biomass reference points, review the plan team's calculation of the overfishing limit, and develop recommendations for acceptable biological catch. The previous assessment of monkfish had biomass-based reference points based on the lowest observed stock size. So these two plots are from the previous assessment, the data pool workshop. You can see that the biomass threshold is at the lowest observed stock size for both the north and the south. The SARC recommended that those be revised to be based on MSY expectations. If we use either the old biomass reference points or the new recommended biomass reference points, the stocks are not overfished. And the SSC endorses the SARC 50 panel recommendations for revised biomass reference points. But we also recognize the panel's statement about serious concerns and high levels of uncertainty throughout the assessment. The ABC recommendations based on uncertainty in the overfishing limits were considered, but there are major sources of uncertainty in the assessment that simply cannot be quantified. National Standard 1 guidelines are that we should estimate overfishing limit and its uncertainty and based our ABC on our evaluation of uncertainty, but the uncertainties in the monkfish assessment are so substantial and ironically unquantifiable that we cannot use this approach that's recommended in the guidelines. Any alternatives based on 75% FMSY produced ABCs that were at or above maximum catch in the time series. If we were to adjust our ABCs based on retrospective patterns, as has been done in the past, the ABCs would be reduced by approximately half. So that gives you some sense of the magnitude of uncertainty with these monkfish assessments. And so the SSC essentially recognizes that the monkfish assessment is the same as what was produced by the data pool workshop. It is a great improvement over the index-based approach, but the major sources of uncertainty have not been reconciled since the 2007 data pool workshop. And so we're really left with the same scientific content for which to base our acceptable biological catch. Therefore, we're repeating our previous conclusion that the information available doesn't support the conventional approach in National Standard 1 guidelines and that we should use the existing acceptable biological catch control rule, which is the average exploitation rate during the recent periods of increase, and that would be a more appropriate basis for our ABC recommendations. So using the average exploitation rate during the most recent periods of increase, ABC is 7,592 tons in the north and 12,316 tons in the south. Those are 40% and 34% of the estimated overfishing limits. Our ABCs are approximately twice the 2009 catch in annual year. So the SSC also recommends that the Council consider incremental increases in annual catch targets so that we can monitor the resource while increasing catch. In summary, our monkfish recommendations are the biomass reference points should be based on MSY expectations in the next framework adjustment or amendment. The overfishing limit is 19,557 tons for the north and 36,245 for the south, but they are both highly uncertain and major sources of uncertainty cannot be quantified. The acceptable biological catch cannot be derived from uncertainty in OFL estimates, so using the currently accepted ABC control rule, acceptable biological catch is 7,592 for the north and 12,316 for the south, and finally, annual catch targets should allow incremental increases in catch above the 2009 levels while monitoring stock response. That's all I have on monkfish, Mr. Chairman. I don't know if you want to take questions now or at the end.
I'd rather stop here if we could, if there's a couple of quick questions. Anything on monkfish for Steve? David?
Steve, on the incremental increases, are you looking for something that's like a curve or more like steps?
Well, we weren't specific about what we're recommending there. In a sense, we're asking the Council to continue its approach to monkfish. In the past, the Council has chosen not to go right up to the last ton that was allowed, but to take a series of increases. So we're asking you to continue that. And while I have the microphone, I'll just remark how amazing it is that you're here and continue to be one of the most prepared people in the room.
The other question I had is if you do an incremental increase, how long should you leave that in place so that you can get a measurement to see what the effects are?
Yeah, this is actually a national and international best practices, is that when we have uncertainties but we have the perception of high stock and the capacity for increase in catch, that we incrementally increase catch and monitor the response of the resource. And so what we should be doing is taking all the indicators of monkfish, biomass, and fishing mortality and keeping an eye on those as we increase those. In a way, it's adaptive management to learn if the stock can truly support this increased capacity landings.
Anyone else for Steve? Dr. Pierce?
Yes, Steve. Obviously, there's a great difference between the OFL and the ABCs that are being recommended, and the recommendation, I think, is to follow the ABC control rule, which leads to those rather dramatic differences between the overfishing level and the ABC. Can you please refresh my memory as to what the ABC control rule is that obliges us to slash the numbers so dramatically from the OFL to the ABC?
Yes. The ABC control rule was developed after the data pool workshop in 2007. And after the transition from an index-based assessment to this length-based assessment, we felt it was an improvement, but there are still major uncertainties. And so that simply going with the projections from that length-based model, we felt was not a reliable scientific basis for advice. In fact, one of the bullets that Dr. Weinberg presented was that the review panel had great concerns about the projections. And so OFL in itself is a projection. And so it really fell back to a more robust approach to catch advice that doesn't directly conform to National Standard 1. And it's simply taking an average exploitation rate during a recent period of increase. And so we feel reassured that this exploitation rate is sustainable, appropriate for the productivity of the stock, but not necessarily associated with the overfishing limit or its uncertainty.
Again, what's the control rule?
The average exploitation rate during the recent period of increase.
Okay, so we're still relying very heavily on the index of abundance of the bottom trawl survey.
Well, as Dr. Weinberg correctly said, we're no longer simply relying on the bottom trawl surveys. If you'll remember, there were great concerns about using the fall survey index because it catches so few monkfish. And so what this length-based model can do is synthesize information on size structure, recruitment indices, growth, and so we're not so reliant on the surveys anymore. We're relying on all of those monitoring sources of information.
Okay, but the exploitation rate uses the bottom trawl survey data heavily. Therefore, if the control rule is the exploitation rate, I'm still following how we have departed enough from the exploitation rate to get us away from the heavy reliance on the bottom trawl survey data.
Right. There is not a heavy reliance on the survey data. There are many surveys, the spring survey, fall survey, shrimp survey, winter survey. So there are many different surveys, and those surveys are not only putting in aggregate biomass information, they're putting in size structure and recruitment information. There's growth information, there's the magnitude of the catch and its size structure. So I guess it's that we no longer have a heavy reliance on the fall survey, and these exploitation rates are model estimates that synthesize all that information.
Okay, thank you. And is it safe to say that the assessment, as well as the SSC review of the assessment, has concluded that the age or the length structure of the stock north and south, it's still nowhere near the way it used to be when the resource was more robust? In other words, there are far fewer larger fish now than there were back then. I can't recall when then was, but certainly I recall that the age of length structures doesn't look anything like it used to look in the 80s, for example. Is that correct?
That's entirely true, and that's where some of the concern comes from the review panel, is that we have the appearance, all of our perceptions are fairly steady recruitment, in fact, recent strong recruitment in the north, and we have low catch, and there's the expectation of survival and productivity of these resources. However, we haven't seen the size structure rebuild the way it's been expected. So that's one of the major sources of uncertainty.
Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The committee's recommendations include different levels of exploitation for the northern and southern stocks, and I just wanted to ask if there were any biological indicators that would suggest that the different areas can withstand different levels of exploitation. In other words, is there anything in the underlying biology in the two different areas, either in terms of stock structure or other biological indicators, that would suggest that different levels of exploitation are warranted?
This was discussed at length in both the working group and in the review committee meetings, and there does not appear to be strong biological evidence that these are two different stocks. They certainly are two different fisheries in the north and the south, but there does not appear to be a biological reason to separate the two. And one of the things that this recent exploitation rate allows is that there could still be some uncertainties in scale, but they're internally consistent. And so if we use our perception of the recent average exploitation rate, we're simply using that forward, even if there are some scale issues. So I take your point is that we have two different exploitation rates from two resources that should be able to maintain the same exploitation rate, but we're simply not putting that fine a point on it. We're taking a fairly robust approach, is that in the south, but the stock has increased under this average exploitation rate. In the north, they've increased under this average exploitation rate. We're simply saying use those going forward, even if we may be underfishing more in one than the other.
Okay, Steve, if you want to carry on with the next presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Moving on to scallops. Our task was to review the relevant aspects of the recent assessment from Stock Assessment Review Committee 50, provide the Council with an ABC recommendation based on the previously approved ABC control rule for fishing years 2011 and 2012. We reviewed the 50th SAW and PDT analyses and concluded that they provide the information needed for ABC recommendations. As Dr. Weinberg said earlier, We feel that the scallop stock assessment does give us the information we need to comply to the National Standard 1 guidelines and base our ABC on OFL and its uncertainty. The SSC endorses the recommendation to redefine the overfishing on the basis of a direct estimate of FMSY. Scallops were previously managed under a maximum yield per recruit approach. Our previous recommendations to the council were to revise this to be a truly long-term yield approach, and that's being done, and so we endorse the new overfishing reference point of 0.38. We're also able to use the risk assessment that was produced by the stock assessment, and so we can implement the acceptable biological catch control rule, which is a 25% probability of overfishing, and that comes directly from the assessment. And so our recommendations are that the analyses provided by the 50th SAW and the PDT give us everything we need for our ABC recommendations. The new estimate of FMSY is the best scientific information available for management of the fishery. And so our acceptable biological catch for the scallop fishery is 31,279 in 2011 and 33,234 in 2012. I'll take questions if you wish.
Any questions? Okay, moving along.
So moving into the groundfish, we'll start out with pollock, which was the last stock assessed at the 50th SAW. And so we were tasked with providing ABC recommendations with varying levels of probability of overfishing, 40%, 10%, and low risk that the stock will be overfished. To follow up on the council's motion to review the Gulf of Maine winter flounder data since the GARM 3 in 2008 and evaluate whether this updated information is a basis to revise the ABC recommendation for fishing years 2011 and 12. To review the Transboundary Resources Assessment Committee's assessment of Georges Bank yellowtail flounder and to provide acceptable biological catch recommendations based on the rebuilding strategies that are being considered by the council. So that is a 75% probability of rebuilding by 2014 and a range of probabilities of rebuilding by 2016. And finally, to review the index-based stock assessments species for groundfish ocean pout and the two stocks of windowpane. I'll start with pollock. Pollock was previously assessed using an index-based method by GARM 3 in 2008, and then it was determined to be overfished and subject to overfishing. The 50th SAW assessment is based on an age-structured model, and the stock assessment was revised to not overfishing and overfishing, not overfished and overfishing not occurring. The SSC used the SAW 50 assessment of pollock as a basis for revising our ABC recommendations. However, as previously reported, there were considerable uncertainties in the assessment, an important one being the apparent partial selection of larger and older pollock by the fisheries and the surveys, and this is this dome-shaped selectivity. So what I have plotted on the left are the selectivities for different fleets over time. The first curve is a recreational fishery in the early period, essentially targeting small pollock, the harbor pollock recreational fisheries. What we have to the right are different periods of the commercial fishery. So we have a low selectivity of small-sized pollock. As regulations for mesh size increase, we see a series of delays in the selectivity. So selectivity becomes older and older through time. And then at the end, we have our oldest fish. And so this is our age 9 and older fish. In our data, we have pollock out to age 27. So this last selectivity applies to all of the oldest, largest pollock. And so the model allowed for selectivity to be estimated. We did not assume a flat top selectivity, in which case we would have full vulnerability of all old, large pollock. We allowed the data to estimate selectivity to be dome-shaped, and these are the best estimates of selectivity, in which the oldest, largest pollock are only partially selected to the fishery. So here we have about 30% vulnerability to the fishery. That means about only 30% of the fish in the resource are vulnerable to being caught. We also, since we have trawl surveys available for this, there's also dome-shaped selectivity for our trawl surveys. Our spring and fall trawl surveys also have a doming with only 50% selection of older fish. Because of the concerns that implications of this dome-shaped selectivity, there were many sensitivity analyses done, and one that assumed flat-top selectivity, but this also indicated that the stock is not overfished. So we feel that that conclusion is robust to this allowing the selectivity to be domed. The sensitivity analysis did result in lower biomass estimates and suggested that the uncertainty associated with this selectivity estimate is even greater than the statistical estimates of imprecision. So here again, similar to monkfish, we're in a situation where we cannot quantify the uncertainty in the model based on this selectivity issue. And so, as we said, for the rest of the groundfish last year, in the absence of better information on what an appropriate buffer should be between the overfishing limit and the acceptable biological catch, we are basing our ABC on the catch associated with 75% of the fishing mortality that produces maximum sustainable yield. Several scenario analyses were conducted by the plan development team, and these indicate that the acceptable biological catch, based on 75% FMSY, have a low risk of overfishing and low risk of leading to an overfished stock by 2015 if the dome survey selectivity is true. If, however, that allowance is false and the selectivity is actually flat-topped, this 75% FMSY actually is a risky recommendation. And so our best science is that the selectivity is dome-shaped, but allowing that this is very uncertain, we are therefore going forward with this conservative 75% FMSY. The SSC recommends that the acceptable biological catch of pollock is 16,900 tons in 2011, 15,400 tons in 2012, 15,600 tons in 2013, and 16,000 tons in 2014. That's all I have on pollock. I can either take questions now or at the end of groundfish. Keep going. Gulf of Maine winter flounder. As you remember, at your last meeting, you made a motion for the SSC to reconsider our ABC recommendations to review all information that's been collected since the last peer review. At the last peer review, there were many alternative assessments attempted by the groundfish assessment review meeting, but none of them were accepted by the review panel. The panelists concluded that it's highly likely that the biomass is below BMSY, and there's substantial probability that it's below half BMSY. Using those results, the SSC recommended last year that we base the acceptable biological catch on 75% of the most recent three-year average catch, that being 238 metric tons. This year, the council approved the motion for the SSC to reconsider that based on updated information. When the PDT did that and presented that to us, we agreed that the conflicting signals persist in Gulf of Maine winter flounder. So the things that were confounding stock assessment at the last GARM continue to confound a stock assessment. The PDT also developed an alternative approach to deriving acceptable biological catch that's based on the accepted control rule for groundfish and survey data that have been previously used for Gulf of Maine winter flounder. This area-swept survey approach for exploitable biomass suggests that the current acceptable biological catch represents a more conservative exploitation rate than 75% FMSY. The SSC concluded that the area-swept approach to deriving ABC may provide a better scientific basis for ABC than the current approach, which is simply the recent average catch, or 75% of the recent average catch. And it's appropriate for the uncertainties in the data and the possibility that stock is overfished. We request an evaluation by the PDT of candidate ABCs for 2011 based on this area swept survey biomass and 75% FMSY, including further exploration of the survey data properties to be considered by the SSC in November. As a reminder, there is a benchmark assessment scheduled for spring 2011, so any revision for an ABC would only be an interim until the peer review assessments developed. Therefore, we're recommending to the Council that a revised interim acceptable biological catch for Gulf of Maine winter flounder be considered in 2011 based on area swept survey biomass. Moving on to George's yellowtail. The assessment was updated this year by the Transboundary Assessment Committee in July. The retrospective pattern that had been apparent in this stock is reappearing. So this is now a revised assessment that has split survey data series that was designed to reconcile the retrospective pattern. And this retrospective pattern is appearing again, such that we have a 40% decrease in our perception of the stock size after updating the assessment. The Transboundary Management Guidance Committee concluded that the most appropriate catch for U.S. and Canada for Georgia's Bank Yellowtail is 1,900 tons, which is expected to allow 10% rebuilding in the next year and has a low risk of overfishing, even if the retrospective pattern continues. Although there are uncertainties in the stock assessment and the projections, the SSC concluded that these were not sufficient to adjust the assessment downward, for example, to adjust for the retrospective pattern and to modify our catch advice based on the rebuilding scenarios. Concerns about recent recruitment, which appear to be the source of the recent retrospective pattern, affect both the short-term projections for our ABCs as well as the long-term projections that are used for our rebuilding targets. So we're recommending that the alternative assumptions for future recruitment should be considered to re-estimate the rebuilding target. Our recommendations for Georgia's yellowtail, and again, we were asked to provide a series of acceptable biological catch based on the different rebuilding plans that are being considered by the Council. The first bullet is that the current rebuilding plan is not possible even at an acceptable biological catch of zero. So this is a result from our change in perception of the stock biomass. We now no longer feel that the stock can be rebuilt by 2014. If the rebuilding requirement is relaxed to 2016, that can be done with a 50% probability of success with just under 2,000 tons of catch. If the probability of rebuilding is increased, that requires reductions in the catch to just under 15,000 tons and just about 600 tons. And finally, the rebuilding target, BMSY, should be reconsidered by the next benchmark assessment to account for lower recruitment than assumed in the last 30 years. And so these are the ranges of acceptable biological catches in comparison with the recent catches of Georgia's Bank Yellowtail. Closing with index-based groundfish, this time last year, the SSC recommended ABCs for index-based groundfish, but because those indices are being updated every year, we felt we should monitor those indices during these multi-year ABC recommendations. So ocean pout and northern and southern windowpane flounder are the index-based groundfish assessments. Updated surveys indicate approximately a 5% reduction in ocean pout and greater reductions for the windowpanes. However, those reductions assume a preliminary survey calibration estimate. As you know, the survey system has changed from the Albatross system to the Bigelow system, and other more in-depth evaluations of calibration have found for flatfish that a size-based calibration is needed. So because those analyses have not been done, the SSC does not recommend revising ABCs, revised ABCs for the index-based groundfish stocks, that they not be revised. That's all I have for groundfish, Mr. Chairman.
That's it.
We'll close out with just some quick business on our next meeting. I'm sorry, habitat, and then our next meeting.
Questions on groundfish? Dr. Pierce?
Yes, Steve, thank you very much. Just a question about the Gulf of Maine winter flounder recommendation in particular. I believe you indicated that you're asking for the plant development team to do an area swept survey biomass estimate for winter flounder, that would enable the SSC, I guess, to be in a better position to actually have some numbers to recommend to us for ABC. Do you have any feeling as to when that work could be done or can be done, and how reliable might an area swept biomass estimate be for Gulf of Maine winter flounder?
There were estimates of area swept biomass presented to us. The issue here really is a challenge in which we do not have a peer-reviewed assessment for Gulf of Maine winter flounder. Ideally, we would be basing our catch recommendations on the most recent peer-reviewed assessment. What we have are analyses of the survey data that have been used for Gulf of Maine winter flounder in the past. Those analyses have been done, but because there hasn't been a peer review, the SSC feels that it needs to get into some of the aspects of the surveys more in depth, those being the confidence limits of the surveys, the area distribution of the surveys, some of the gear mensuration in the surveys, so that we can be sure that we can provide the best scientific information available. Now, this will not have time to go through a peer review, recognizing that there is a scheduled peer review for next spring. And so we feel that given the options of no peer-reviewed assessment and an estimate of area swept survey biomass, that it's worth looking into further. Did that answer your question?
Yes, you did. Thank you very much. And one last question. Obviously, the Georges Bank Yellowtail Flounder Assessment has problems, a retrospective pattern being one of those problems. Did the SSC have any give any thought to whether or not an area swept survey biomass estimate would be useful for Georges Bank Yellowtail? And if so, do the data exist for us to do that? Would it be beneficial for us to actually take a look at that kind of a biomass estimate to help us better understand what's going on with Georges Bank Yellowtail?
Yes, actually, having been a member of the Transboundary Assessment Committee this year, there is a estimate of area swept biomass provided in the track summary document. The biomass figure in that has both the VPA biomass as well as the area swept biomass to try to illustrate the uncertainty in scale in the assessment. So those estimates are available for you, and they're in the track summary document.
Thanks. Following up on David Pierce's question about the area swept, of course, my view is that this is a different approach. And as you indicated, it has not yet been peer-reviewed. And as you also indicated, we're on track to have a SAW-SARC, obviously, in less than a year. And clearly in a year we'd have peer-reviewed advice. And my view again is that I think the area swept method is something that we do need to evaluate, and this will be our first opportunity to do that with the flatfishes, because we are going to do the assessment for all three stocks. So my concern is the SSC making a recommendation that there be some interim action taken based on, in my view, what is not a peer-reviewed methodology.
Yeah, thank you, Nancy. This we're very lucky to have Fred Sirchuk being the liaison from the center to the SSC sitting at the table with us. And Fred raised that exact concern, and the SSC shares that concern. There are two aspects to peer review. One of them is procedural, and we've learned several times that the SSC is not the procedural authority. There are other authorities for that in the region. But there's also a scientific aspect to peer review, and peer review is one of the touchstones of best science, and peer review improves the quality. And so we're really torn between having no assessment from a peer review and trying to base catch recommendations on something that hasn't gone through formal peer review. So we recognize the concern, but we need to reply to the motion by the council. And if requested, we're put in the challenging situation of coming up with best science when we don't have a peer-reviewed assessment.
Jimmy?
Yes, on your projections on Georges Bank Yellowtail, it's my understanding that the recruitment, the average recruitment that you're projecting is basically 30 years old, and that we haven't reached that average recruitment in the past 30 years. Am I correct in that assumption?
Partially. What we assume in the reference point and the rebuilding projections is that recruitment will be similar to the long-term average. And so we have 30 years of recruitment estimates, and we assume the entire distribution. However, most of the dominant year classes in Georgia's Yellowtail were more than 30 years ago. And so some of those are based on survey hindcast, and we haven't seen strong recruitment in Georges Bank Yellowtail for the last 30 years. Now, we had the perception that the 2005 year class was going to be one of these dominant year classes. And so it was logical to assume this long time series of recruitment. Now that, our perception of that year class has gone down, we're recommending that we reconsider the recruitment assumption in that reference point estimate.
Any more questions for Steve? Okay, Steve, you can wrap it up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So moving on to habitat. As you know, you're currently developing an omnibus for essential fish habitat. Phase one has been completed, which described and identified essential fish habitat. Phase two is under development, which includes alternatives to minimize the alteration of habitat from fishing effort. The Habitat PDT has been working over the last few years to create a swept area seabed impact model to objectively compare management alternatives. The SSC reviewed the structure and data inputs to the model at two meetings in 2009 and previously concluded that the SASE model is technically sound and a reliable basis for evaluating alternative management decisions on habitat impact. Given the SSC's involvement in providing the Council with recommendations on ecosystem approaches, it would be appropriate for us to review the applications for management decisions, and so as we get closer to the management decisions, we were asked to review it again. The PDT has developed two types of spatial analysis. One is to evaluate the existing area closures in New England, and the other is to determine areas where the model has significantly higher scores. And these are sensitivity scores where you can recognize habitat that is more vulnerable than the currently closed areas. And this is using their local indicators of spatial association, or the LISA model. There was also a model on a variation that was developed to assess the practicability of spatial management measures termed the ZNet stock model. The SSC concludes that the Habitat PET's analyses may be the most technically advanced attempt to evaluating fishing effects on habitat and could be the basis for a broader research and monitoring program. The SSC has now reviewed the PDT's methods at several stages and have found no major technical flaws. However, the process would benefit from more formal peer review of the methodology. Similar to our last discussion, this analysis developed by the PDT has not gone through formal peer review. The only peer review has been from the SSC, rather in-depth, at several forums. We've included outside expertise in that, but we're still recommending that more formal peer review would benefit the process. We conclude that the PDT's analyses are useful for identifying areas of habitat that are vulnerable to alteration from fishing and for evaluating area closures. The SASE model identifies locations with habitats that are altered by fishing effort, and the LISA analysis evaluates contiguous areas of these habitats. The SSC concludes that the PDT's methods are valid and the reported results are realistic. The PDT's comparisons of practicability among management alternatives are promising, but the SSC recognized several areas in which they could be improved. We realize that the economics of multi-species trade-offs and utilities are extremely complicated, and anticipating changes in fishing behavior are difficult, particularly when closing areas and trying to estimate where that effort will be displaced to. Alternative approaches to modeling the effects of closed areas and redistribution of fishing effort for area closures should be explored. The PDT methods may help inform some management decisions, but are not adequately developed for general application at this time. Our recommendations on habitat are that the PDT's methods are the most appropriate measure of habitat alteration for the information available to support fishery management decisions. The evaluation of data support should continue to be routinely considered for interpreting results of spatial analyses. The PDT has developed a way to evaluate data support so that as management decisions are being considered, you can also look at the data that are supporting those analyses. And finally, the economic analyses for comparing practicability among alternatives needs more extensive consideration, particularly on the redistribution of fishing effort. That's all I have for habitat.
Questions for Steve? David?
On that last point, Steve, when you're looking at this economic analysis, are you looking just at its effects on habitat, or are you looking at a much broader picture, such as increased fuel costs or amount of time spent at sea? What exactly were you recommending there?
The analyses that was presented to us include the costs of fishing, so fuel costs, other variable costs, as well as the revenue that would be derived from any different location, and the objective function, that is, the metric that determines where effort would be displaced to, was based on profit. However, even though that's a realistic assumption, we recognize that there have been previous advances, for example, the closed area model used in groundfish, that had constraints within that profit-seeking objective function, that home ports, target species, markets, are some of the constraints that do not make redistribution of effort purely a profit-seeking objective. And so what we're recommending is to expand upon the bioeconomic modeling that was presented to us to include some of these complexities.
Mark Gibson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve, one of the things that I've come to be concerned about with this, first, SASE is a fabulous development and state-of-the-art means to compute seabed impact to the extent that information on deployment of various fishing gears, mapping of different habitat types and its vulnerability is available. What I'm coming to understand, though, is that there's no linkage between seabed impact either in the past or present, which SASE is able to calculate, and fishery productivity. So I'm having difficulty seeing how we're going to use this in concert with fishing mortality management in terms of stock rebuilding. I can see how we can evaluate an area closed versus a potential alternate area closure in terms of this Z calculation. But I don't see at this point how it's going to work into our stock rebuilding initiatives. And there should be a fundamental linkage between habitat and fishery productivity. And I'm not seeing that yet. And I'm on the Habitat Committee. And I'm wondering if the SSC has had any discussions about this. And if so, where they think that could go. It looks to me like it's going to be a serious limitation for the council down the road.
Yeah, that's actually something that the entire council should recognize. The mandate for minimizing adverse impact of fishing on habitat is very precisely defined. And that phrase, adverse impact, is what really gets at what you're talking about, Mark. Is that in the guidelines, that's reduced fishery productivity, so that fishing effort has an impact on habitat in which it reduces the fishery productivity of that habitat. I think you correctly said that the SASE model doesn't directly do that at this time. And so you'll notice that in the SSC report, we've concluded that the SASE model is effective for monitoring habitat alteration. And we also feel that that's our best scientific approach to the mandate at this time. However, the SASE model is also a framework in which we could layer productivity information. Right now, we simply don't have the information on the fishery productivity of different habitats. We've mapped habitats. We've assigned their sensitivities to different gears, their recovery rates. And so the SSC feels that the SASE model is monitoring habitat alteration very well, but it could in the future include fishery productivity, but right now this is the best science available. But I take your point is that we really haven't evaluated the different habitats and how they contribute to fishery production. And I know I didn't entirely answer your question, but I think it's a point that the entire council should consider in interpreting the results that come out of SASE.
David?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Is this thing working?
Yeah, okay. And I would like to specifically thank Steve for fitting us in at a late time on a very tight time schedule for the recent review. It was the intent of SASE to be able to grow with time because there are serious gaps in the data. One of the things that SASE is designed to do is to identify exactly where the gaps are to help us to tell exactly where they are and to guide us on what new research is required. As far as the productivity is concerned, as you point out, there is no science to support that. None is available right now. Hopefully it will be. And as we move from single species management into an ecosystem-based management strategy, then we are hoping that that will emerge. And the intent of SASE is to help us to move in that direction. That's the ultimate purpose for it.
Anyone else for Steve? Okay, Steve.
All right, I can quickly wrap it up just by going to, sorry. Can I go to the last slide? Just looking forward to our next meeting. Our next meeting, we will be going through our final review of the, the final review of our ecosystem-based fishery management plan. As you know, that's been under development for the last more than a year. We're going through the final review of that, and so we hope to deliver that white paper to the council in November. We'll also be reviewing our acceptable biological catch control rules, as well as providing the research priorities. We'll have elections for SSC chair and vice chair and going over our agenda, our calendar for 2011. That's all I have. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate all the work you've done. Any final questions for Steve? Okay. Rick?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Steve did mention the upcoming discussion on ecosystems, and I would just point out that I would hope that that'll be an opportunity for both SSCs to collaborate on that question. I mentioned yesterday that our SSC has formed a subcommittee that would advise the council on ecosystem matters, and so hopefully we can have some collaboration between the SSCs and those committees. Thank you.
Just to foreshadow, that will be one of our recommendations, is to have a regional approach to this.
Mary Beth?
Yeah, just a quick question on process. The SSC membership, their terms are for 3 years, is that correct? So we have an SSC where is everybody turning over at the same time? And it seems a little problematic if that's the case. I mean, so I'm just curious how that's working out.
I mean, we've had some offline discussions about staggering terms so you don't have a have to go through the prop, but the alternative there is that you're constantly trying to potentially fill seats every year. I think something we can talk with the SSC about if they want us to make some of the terms shorter this next go around. But they all came on at the same time. They're all ending their 3-year term. Most of them are staying on board, and we're looking for more seats as well. So, you know, maybe we can shorten some of their terms, but that would require a change in the SOPs.
Well, I appreciate that somebody is paying attention to that issue, because certainly if you have a whole body of people whose terms all end at the same time, that continuity issue can be significant. So I appreciate that sounds like you're addressing it.
Dr. Pierce.
Yeah, for Steve. Steve, you do have an interaction with the Mid-Atlantic SSC, correct? That's obviously a great benefit, I'm sure, to both SSCs. Because of the Pollack assessment and the SSC's review of the Pollack assessment and the concept of cryptic fish, and going over the logic within your SSC report as to why those fish may be cryptic, I would hope that you and your conversations with your counterparts in the Mid-Atlantic would investigate the possibility of there being mackerel cryptic fish, since there seems to be some similarities there. I could be wrong, but anyways, there's a lot of controversy about the mackerel assessment, fast-swimming fish. So if maybe there's some cryptic fish there as well.
I guess I could respond to that, is that dome-shaped selectivity is actually a global fisheries issue at the time. In fact, there's a meeting in France this week about that, with people from all over the world trying to contribute to it. It's a major uncertainty in our assessments, and what seems to be the developing best practices to try to directly justify a dome when it appears to exist. And this isn't the first time that New England has confronted the possibility of dome-shaped selectivity. In the groundfish assessments, it was the issue was brought up, and tagging data was able to confirm that the oldest, largest fish were just as vulnerable as the mid-age, mid-sized fish. And you really need to justify it. And with pollock, we feel that with the gillnet fisheries with dome-shaped selectivity and with the swimming speed experiments that have been done for pollock, in which they, as they get larger, their swimming endurance and speed goes up, that we could justify it. So the burden is on justifying whether the data estimated selectivity can be realistic.
Okay, thanks, Steve. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll get into monkfish.